One of my first customers was a village character named Nick. Nick painted when he did anything. His canvases were very small and looked as if they had been concentrated, compressed, misshapen by a tremendous pressure. The product of a depraved mind, a narcotics agent pronounced solemnly after viewing one of Nick's pictures. Nick was always half sick, his large, plaintive brown eyes watering slightly and his thin nose running. He slept on couches in the apartments of friends, existing on the precarious indulgence of neurotic, unstable, stupidly suspicious individuals who would suddenly throw him out without reason or warning. For those people, he also scored, hoping that he would receive in return at least the head off a cap to take the edge off his constant junk hunger. Often he got nothing but a casual thanks, the purchaser having convinced himself that Nick had somehow got his on the other end. As a result, Nick began stealing a small amount from each cap, loosening up the junk so that it filled the cap. There was not much left of Nick. His constant, unsatisfied hunger had burned out all other concerns. He talked vaguely about going to Lexington for the cure, or shipping out in the Merchant Marine, or buying paregoric in Connecticut and tapering off on it. Nick introduced me to Tony, who tended bar in a village bar and restaurant. Tony had been pushing and nearly got nailed when the Federals rushed into his apartment. He barely had time to throw a 16th-ounce packet of H under the piano. The Federals found nothing but his works, and they let him go. Tony was scared and quit pushing. He was a young Italian who obviously knew his way around. He looked capable of keeping his mouth shut. A good type customer. I went to Tony's bar every day and ordered a Coca-Cola. Tony would tell me how many caps he wanted, and I would go into the phone booth or the WC and wrap his caps up in silver paper. When I got back to my Coke, the money for the caps was there on the bar like change. I dropped the caps into an ashtray on the bar, and Tony emptied the ashtray under the bar, taking out his caps. This routine was necessary because the owner knew Tony had been a user and told him to stay off stuff or get another job. In fact, the owner's son was a user, at this time in a sanitarium taking the cure. When he got out, he came straight to me to buy stuff. He said he couldn't stay off. A young Italian hipster named Ray used to come to this bar every day. He seemed okay, so I took care of him, too, dropping his caps in the ashtray with Tony's. This bar where Tony worked was a small place down several steps from street level. There was only one door. I always felt trapped when I went in there. The place gave me such a feeling of depression and danger that I could hardly bring myself to go through the door. After taking care of Tony and Ray, I generally met Nick in a cafeteria on 6th Avenue. He always had the price of a few caps on him. I knew, of course, that he was scoring for other people, but I did not know who they were. I should have known better than to have dealings with anybody like Nick, who was sick and broke all the time, and therefore liable to pick up anybody's money. Some people need an intermediary to score for them because they are strangers in town, or because they've not been on junk long enough to get acquainted. But the pusher has reason to be wary of people who send someone else to score. By and large, the reason a man can't score is because he is known to be wrong, so he sends somebody else to score who may not be wrong himself, but simply desperate for junk. To score for a pigeon is definitely not ethical. Often a man goes on from scoring for pigeons to become a pigeon himself. I was not in a position to turn money down. I had no margin. Every day I had to sell enough caps to buy the next quarter ounce, and I was never more than a few dollars ahead. So I took whatever money Nick had and asked no questions. I knew Nick was a bad security risk, but I could not afford to pack him in.